everybody. We are so excited today. We are back talking non-Hallmark movies. Yes, you haven't heard from us since our top 10 countdown we did of Christmas. But we are here to talk about some recent non-Hallmark movies. I'm Rachel and Amy is here.
Hello, guys. Yay! We are back. Off networking. Yeah. That's a verb.
We had to wait until there were enough that weren't horrible. They weren't going to traumatize us for life.
Exactly.
that we wanted to talk about. And so how have you been since Christmas?
I've been good. Been good. Back in school. Back to the grind. A lot less Christmas in my life.
you miss watching like what was it, like 13 Christmas movies a week, like we were doing?
No, not really. I realized after the fact that my kitten, we got him in November, so like until January he'd only ever seen Christmas movies. Like this kitten probably thought Christmas was the only part of his life.
He like hears Christmas bells and he like immediately triggered.
I'm like, he never saw anything that wasn't Christmas related for like the first 2-3 months he lived with us, so.
That is really funny. Like Lady and the Tramp but with cats. So we have quite a bit of variety here in the three movies we're going to talk about. And it's going to be fun. We have two Lifetime movies, one Disney Channel original movie. But I guess the common theme maybe is they're all female-centric.
Yeah, females.
Yes. So the first thing that we're going to talk about is the from Lifetime, we have Victoria Gotti, My Father's Daughter. And I saw the Gotti film from last year that was a feature film, and it was terrible. It was one of the worst movies I think I've ever seen in my life. It was just so bad in so many ways. It was everything from the costuming to the makeup to the lighting to the editing to the script to it was very bad. And the thing that made it even more terrible is that they try at the end of the movie to paint the mafia as a like persecuted minority group, which was hilarious but ridiculous. Like they're like, the FBI hunted down John Gotti and his family for 9 months. They wouldn't leave him alone and blah blah blah, all this stuff at the end of the movie, and you're like, no, those agents are heroes. They were here. Like, they wouldn't give up on arresting this criminal.
Yeah.
Like, what's wrong with you? It was so funny. And, like, that's actually a good thing that they kept, you know.
Yeah, they were trying to capture a criminal. Like,
yeah. Right. And so, anyway, it was really bizarre and funny. And so, I can confidently say that this movie about Victoria Gotti, it's not without its flaws, but it was definitely better than the feature film Gotti. So, way to go.
Go Lifetime.
Yeah, that's right.
You get 1 point.
Yeah, I mean, have you been able to see, like, there's a whole sort of genre of organized crime movies. Like, have you gotten to see any of them?
Not really my style.
Yeah.
I think I enjoyed this one just because it was from her perspective.
Uh-huh.
And she was actually sharing it.
Yeah.
Because the other ones are kind of just like the crime centric, and is not as interesting to me. So
yeah, I mean, I feel like everybody who is a cinemaphile, really into movies, you need to eventually see the two Godfather movies. You don't really need to see the third because it's terrible. But the first two are so well made, and they're so well acted and just well put together And they do have something, I think, to kind of say, but I still, they're movies that I admire more than I like, because I admire for what they're trying to do. They do a very good job. And obviously it's on a whole nother league in this movie, but I, it's never been a favorite genre of mine. I just find it's just hard for me to kind of relate to, and they are pretty violent. So it's just not, and they're really long.
I know. Yeah. I'm just always like, wow, there was a lot of time in this person's life for it to be this long of a movie.
Yeah. I mean, it's about a whole family, so I guess, but yeah, I mean, the whole message of The Godfather is basically like, it's, you can kind of treat it as this metaphor that people, just like people don't listen to people don't listen to God. People don't listen to, they don't listen to the Godfather. They don't listen to the Don. Mm-hmm. And they think they know the best way to live. They think they know what's right. And so you can kind of extrapolate from, use it as sort of a metaphor, because it's so isolated. They never really, aside from cops, they never really interact with anybody who's not a part of their organization or their thing. And so it's sort of a, I don't know, it's a weird thing. But anyway, so, but yeah, it's never been my favorite genre. But what did you think about in this movie about the fact that they interweaved her own, the actual Vittori Gotti, her own interviews, and sort of her as a narrator, and having her there, not just narrating, but actually her there being interviewed, into the movie? Did you like that? Because that was sort of a risky choice, I thought.
I really liked it because it made it feel like it was more like it's her story, it's her telling it. So it was more interesting to me because I knew it was personally coming from her, rather than just Lifetime saying and making a movie about her life. That she was like very involved in it, is it made it seem more personal, and I enjoyed that she was actually telling the story as the story was going along.
Yeah, I liked it too, surprisingly. It seems like the kind of thing that could be super cringy. Mm-hmm. But I thought it actually worked because she's such a kind of over the top. It kind of grounded the movie to me.
Yeah.
Because it would feel like, oh, this is so over the top. And like her life and, you know, those deep sort of New York accents and the, you know, some of the over the top things, like having her there being like, yeah, that really happened. And here's what happened next. It kind of made it feel a little more real to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in fact that they did such a good job with casting, she looked so much like, I think, Vittori Gotti, the Chelsea Fry is her name.
Yeah, she did. I was like, wow, they did a really good cast.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think so. And I thought she was a pretty good actress. I thought she did a pretty good job.
Yeah, she did. The blonde, though, that wig.
Yeah, the wigs.
That was my least favorite part.
The wigs were really bad. I even tweeted it out on Twitter when I was watching. I'm like, all these Italians deserve better wigs than this. What's going on? That's very true. And they had Maurice Bernard playing John Gotti, and he was really famous for being on General Hospital for forever years. And I can tell you one thing, he was better than John Travolta. Definitely better than John Travolta. they definitely were kind of setting him up as this sort of beloved character. Like, you hardly ever saw him
doing
any crimes.
Yeah. And I feel like that was specifically because it was coming from her and it was her part of the story. It wasn't, and she, at least from what the movie portrayed, she wasn't really involved in that.
Yeah. Yeah. You would think, you would think from watching this movie that the worst thing that John Gotti ever did was keep her from marrying Carmine. He's such an overbearing dad. How dare he? But yeah, he's set up as kind of this beloved father, which was probably true. And I thought he did a pretty good job. Did you?
Yeah.
Yeah, do you think it was?
I'm not really sure. Like, I don't know the god. I had no, before you asked me to watch this, I had no idea who any of these people were.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So I have no idea. And I looked it up. John Gotti died when I was 4 years old. So I have no idea. This was my first ever mob anything relation. So if I wouldn't have Googled it afterward, I actually figured out what he kind of did, I would have been oh, he was just a dad that stole some things.
He was really famous for, they called him the Teflon Don because he kept getting, they kept trying to prosecute him and nothing would stick. Yeah. It's like the Travolta one. They wouldn't leave him alone.
Yeah, I Googled afterwards and was like, okay, so this happened and this happened. I read a few articles and was like, okay, I wasn't even born yet when all this happened, but okay.
Because for some reason, I do find I'm not interested really in the day-to-day operations of the mafia, but I do find kind of the way the society was run for so long kind of interesting, and the way different alliances work. Cause there was this whole thing called Cosa Nostra. There used to be these, I think there were five families in New York. Cause you had Italian mafia, and then you had Jewish mafia, and you had, there was Irish mafia, but the Italian mafia had five families that were all part of Cosa Nostra. We're all fighting against each other and killing each other. But then it became a point where they all decided they reached this truce and became this kind of this organization with, and so what's interesting about John Gotti, and I'm not some huge expert, but whatever. Mm-hmm. What's interesting about him is that because it used to be there was this big divide between the Cosa Nostra would not get into drugs, the drug trafficking, that they were just about fleecing unions and making, getting money off of the Teamsters were very in with the mafia. Anyway, things like that, as opposed to drugs. Mm-hmm. And then it seems like with John Gotti, that all started to change a lot. And then basically with his arrest, it was kind of like the end, and death was sort of the end of La Cosa Nostra and the end of the mafia as it had been known for years. And I'm sure it still exists, but not in the same way. Cause it wasn't only him. It was cause he was the Don of the whole, of all the families and everything. But everything kind of dissolved the way it had been for so long, which is interesting to me. I think that's fascinating, but, anyway, so he was kind of a pivotal character, and he was really known for wearing really nice suits and looking very, very snappy. And he was, because a lot of times the old Dons would hide and not want people to really notice them that much, and they would have their places that they would go to eat, their Italian restaurants and their whatever. But he was kind of more outspoken and more of a celebrity than others. And so it's an interesting life. It's an interesting person. This movie, it pretty much focuses most of the movie on the romance between Victoria and Carmine, her first husband, and her children and the chance of being able to have and all of that. What did you think of the romance?
It was so weird to me.
Uh-huh.
I was like, I was walking home from school and some guy was standing on his car being like, I know who you are, I'd be like, run. It seems so strange to me. And he didn't seem a particularly good boyfriend.
Yeah.
And I was like, why does she keep putting herself in this situation?
Yeah.
I just didn't get it. I wouldn't that's something I wouldn't have personally done, but I mean, I guess each their own.
He didn't seem that charismatic, and then he has that huge shift on their honeymoon where he bets and loses all of their money, like $40,000 or something like that, that they had gotten for wedding presents and other stuff. And then it's like all downhill from there. She leaves. She thinks she's, but you know, you're a good Italian Catholic girl. You're not gonna get divorced. Mm-hmm. And so she ends up staying with him, having these kids. First, she doesn't think that she can have kids, and then she gets pregnant, and she has, I think, three. I believe I forgot to write that down, but she has a bunch of kids, and it sort of goes through all of that, and then they do end up finally getting divorced at the end when she just can't take it anymore.
Yeah,
and he was probably the weakest acting, I would think, of.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
Yeah,
he was just, I don't know, I was just very confused. Mm-hmm. It didn't seem like they had any chemistry.
Yeah,
there was nothing there. Yeah,
I agree. And then they have a little bit about her father's legal troubles, and then him being in jail and mm-hmm. all that. But the other main plot, I think, is her brother's death.
Death, yeah.
How that affected the whole family, and particularly her mother. How mm-hmm. she just kind of closed down.
I don't think they depicted that well, because she said like, oh, my mother was never the same. And then like two scenes later, the mom's fine.
And then she would go back to being like kind of mentally unstable.
I was like, what? Wait, it confused me.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't like consistent.
Well, and then the neighbor who accidentally hit the brother all of a sudden ends mm-hmm. up missing.
Yeah.
And basically everybody knows that he was, you know, he was taken out by the mafia, by her dad, which is, I don't know, that's just sort of, I guess that was never, they never found, they weren't able to pin that on him or what, but yes. That's just kind of,
I always wonder how
did these left out there.
How did these people get away with all this stuff for so long? Were that many people scared of them or something?
Yeah. I mean, if there's a whole, it's not just one man, it's a whole organization that will kill you and is brutal. And, these people would go into, had gone into restaurants and just killed multiple people, depending on, it's funny because we have this whole sort of mythology and kind of lore about some of these people, like someone like mm-hmm. an Al Capone, who when you really look at some of the things that he did, he was a brutal, brutal man. He was not a Robin Hood kind of character, but sometimes I feel like they're kind of portrayed that way. And so I don't know. It's just I totally get it that if you would not want to tick off the mob, have them after you. If you, especially, I don't know.
Was it something like, I'm just curious, was this something that was like in the news constantly? Like when you were younger, did you see this growing up, like in papers and on TV, news shows and stuff?
Well, I didn't because my parents didn't let us watch stuff like that. But it's particularly because her dad was so like the celebrity guy, like with his fancy clothes and like known for kind of, he was a different kind of Don than they'd had before. And so he was in the news more than the others because of his personality. And so, so in that way, he was kind of his own worst enemy. He wasn't some Don who was like on the sly and, you know, happy being at Gino's, whatever. Like, that's not who he was. And, for people that were watching stuff like that and watching, you know, Inside Edition or shows like that during that time, I'm sure there were stories about this and about,
I don't recall anything, but that was little like
child.
I think like the first big thing on the news that I remember is like Michael Jackson dying. So like,
oh my gosh, that's so funny.
I'm like, yeah. I don't know.
But yeah, I mean, I thought that her mom, the lady who played her mom, did a pretty good job of kind of showing that sort of trauma, and it could have been better written, the script with all of that, but it was serviceable. I think it was,
you know, it was the story she wanted to tell, and yeah. That's, I mean, it's not something that I'm really going to keep with me because it's, yeah. I don't really know about it. It's yeah. like, oh, I watched it.
Yeah, it's true. It's kind of like, in a way, this recent Bohemian Rhapsody movie, because it was executive produced by the two of the members of Queen, like any depiction of them, of those yeah. characters in the movie is like as squeaky clean as you could get. They're like, sorry, I can't stay out late at this party.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Party because I have a family who loves me and I need to get home and spend time with them. And then it's like only Freddie Mercury is like the only one that's like living it up and being a rock star. Yeah, this is true. And you could just tell that there were these people behind the scenes who were like, you can't portray me that way. Sorry, buddy, you know, kind of thing. And like they literally have this whole sort of intervention with Freddie where they're like, when are you going to settle down and have like all of us? They're like, what's going on? I never knew that the lead singers in Queen were we're like Boy Scout troop leaders, but that's okay.
Oh my god! See, I didn't even try to go see that movie because I'm like, I know like two Queen songs. I don't even know like how many boys were in there. Like,
well, you should remedy that because they have great songs. But the movie, in my opinion, not great. It does have some great concert scenes, but I thought the script was very pedestrian. And it just has the same kind of sanitized feel that, I mean, obviously it's technically a better movie than this, but this also has a very, like, sanitized feel that, like, you know, we're presenting this very sanitized version of the mafia and a very sanitized version of, there's nothing here that's, like, super controversial. And it's like, oh, they were brave there. But I thought with the interview and the pretty good performances, I thought it was an entertaining movie, and
yeah,
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I liked it. It was I know a little bit more about the past if I need the question on Jeopardy.
Hey, there you go. Look at that. Yeah.
That.
So, so yeah. So I would give it judging off of other TV movies and that kind of thing, I'd probably give it 3 stars.
I agree with you about 3 stars. It wasn't like it wasn't like, oh my gosh, I loved it, but it wasn't like bad. So
yeah. Interesting. So, all right. And you guys can all put in your recommendations in the comments of Queen songs that Amy should listen to.
My parents are going to be like, why is she, like, what happened? Like, what is she really listening to? Like, okay. All of a sudden, one day it goes from One Direction to the 1970s in my room.
So 1980s.
Sorry.
But anyway, so yeah, let's talk about this second lifetime, and then let's do Kim Possible last.
Right.
More sense in my head that way. All right. So then we had, also on Lifetime, we had Olivia Newton-John, Hopelessly Devoted to You. So this is a musical biopic and about Olivia Newton-John. And honestly, I think I might like this legitimately better than Bohemian Rhapsody. I thought this was really well done. And it's very interesting because I found out, I did some research into this movie, because I'm like, this is way better than a normal Lifetime movie. What is going on here? And I found out that this movie was created for Australian television with a pretty big budget.
Yeah, when I looked it up, it was like, oh, it already came out like 2 years ago someplace else. Yeah.
And the lead performer who plays Olivia Newton-John as an adult, there's two people who play her, that she, Delta Goodrem, she is a judge on the Australian version of The Voice.
Oh, okay.
She's actually pretty famous there and like a pretty well-known singer. So I don't know how you felt. I was really impressed by it. I thought...
I really liked it.
Yeah. I thought it was really good. Really good. And I thought not only was it well acted, I thought it seemed, from everything that I researched after, it seemed pretty accurate
to her life, that's what I thought.
Which isn't true about Bohemian Rhapsody. But also, I thought that there was a little bit of artistry to the way things were shot, the way that they used the sort of 8mm camera, to show like home video kind of camera look to certain sections.
Yeah, it was very cool. Like, it was very stylistic. I feel like they did a really good job of making it seem like that time period.
Yeah. The costuming was good. The wigs were good. If there were wigs, they were good.
There was not a bad wig.
Yeah. And even the lighting, I thought there was some cool... I just was really impressed. This is a step up from a typical TV movie, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. There are two Olivias. How did that bother you? Or was it fine for you?
I didn't even notice until I looked it up afterwards. I really didn't notice.
Oh, yeah. Because I was like, oh, no, because I was really liking that first Olivia. She was doing a really good job.
When did it switch?
It switched after she, I think it switched when she left her first...
Fiancé.
Yeah, okay. And then that makes sense.
Okay, because at one point I was like, wow, her nose looks a little different. But, okay, that makes sense, yeah.
And so I was like, oh no, I was really liking this one. I hope I'm going to like this new person just as much. And I did. I ended up really liking her a lot. And I thought pretty much the whole cast was strong. It's challenging because she's had a lot of relationships and a lot of people in her life. So it was a pretty big cast.
Yeah, I was shocked. I was thinking like, oh, they're only going to bring in the guy that she ends up with. And they didn't do that. Like, they showed everything. And I didn't know like anything really about her life previously. I thought she was found on Grease. Like, I thought Grease was her debut.
Oh, yeah.
Until I watched this movie. So, yeah. Well, I didn't know she was almost 30 in Grease.
Yeah. Well, the grand tradition of Hollywood, playing high school students when you're 30. Both of them were. around 30, which is hilarious. And the young Olivia was Morgan Griffin is her name, and like I said, the older one is Delta Goodrem, and they both did a really good job. And what I didn't know is I didn't realize that she got her start doing country music. It was originally Nashville. I had no idea about that. That was interesting to me.
Yeah, I watched it with my parents, and they were, like, singing every song, and they're like, yeah, I remember this came on the radio, and I remember when this was on the top 10 for the first time, and we used to drive and listen to the song, and I'm like, oh my gosh, my parents.
But all the singing, I thought, was really good. It was very well done.
Yeah.
In the movie.
She was amazing.
Yeah.
Such a good voice.
Yeah. She has really strong vocals and did a good job sounding like she did a good job with sounding enough like Olivia Newton-John, but not like she's just completely copying her, but still her own sound. It's kind of like in the movie Walk the Line, which is a movie I love, the Joaquin Phoenix, he sounds enough in the flavor of Johnny Cash without like completely imitating Johnny Cash, which I appreciate. And it kind of goes through her different periods in her life. Turns out she has this like young love, this kind of manager. She ended up having relationship with her managers a lot.
Yeah, I was like, I don't think that's a good idea. Like,
yeah, I mean, the only real, like, I guess if I was going to have a flaw with this movie is that there's certain biopics that will focus on one particular concert, one particular era, like Walk the Line. It doesn't really talk about Johnny Cash's conversion to Christianity and his later sort of gospel years or him and his children with June, or it's just about that early years and they're the start of their relationship. And I think maybe this might have bit off a little bit more than it could chew at certain times, because it has a lot in here.
Yeah, it was a lot. I was like, this is going through her entire, like, she's 16, and then, it took on a lot. I wasn't expecting to see, like, every one of her lovers almost.
Right.
Like, she started out at 16 and it ended when she had a 16-year-old daughter. So, like, it went a lot of time.
Yeah. I guess in the original airing, it was actually over over two episodes, which kind of makes a little bit more sense, I feel like.
Yeah.
You could kind of...
I could see it being split up into, like, a limited series type of thing, yeah.
Yeah, it was just two episodes, and... because even just the stuff with her last boyfriend who ends up going missing, just that alone could be like its own Lifetime movie.
Yeah.
it probably should be.
I was like, oh my gosh, this woman has had the worst luck with guys.
Yeah, like, she really has.
Like, oh, girl.
I was so mad at her husband that she had her daughter with.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was such a, like, they, I mean, they probably, he's probably a much better dude than in this movie.
Yeah.
I was really mad at him because I'm like, you know, like, you knew what you were getting into when you signed up for this marriage.
Yeah.
You knew you were marrying Olivia Newton-John, for goodness sakes. And you're going to, like, be upset that you're not the breadwinner. I thought, oh, I was so mad at him.
I'm like, when they got divorced, he was on an Australian soap opera, and I looked it up. He hasn't done anything since.
Yeah.
Like, that was it. That was the end of his career. So divorcing her didn't, like, help his career or anything. Like, I just didn't get it. But that
was and also, especially just so soon after, you know, she'd had this, she did cancer and all of this, and I'm sure that they, you know, moved things around a little bit, but I don't know, I just thought that scene, I was so mad at him. I was like, you're such a loser. Like, you should not be threatened by a woman who who makes more money than you, has more success than you, like, because in a marriage you should be, it's the success isn't one partner's success versus another partner's success. It's your success together as a marriage. Like, we did it together. You know, that obviously that's the ideal, and marriage has conflict. But I don't know. I just thought, like, come on, dude.
And it seemed to, like, kind of come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
At least in the movie, that's how it was displayed. And I'm like, where did this come from?
Yeah, and maybe like, they kind of fleshed. I mean, and I don't know if they cut some parts out to make it into one versus the two-episode series versus the movie. Because it did seem like I needed, like, one more scene because they seemed, like, super happy and everything was great. And then she gets, and then all of a sudden it's time for him to go. I was like, that breadwinner line, I'm like, oh, what a loser.
Why? I'm sorry, but you know what? Women can make more than men. Like, I don't get why that's a problem. It's the 21st century. I'm like, come on. Well, it wasn't then, but it is now.
Yeah.
I'm like, exactly. I don't know. That's just, it's so frustrating to me when there's people who are like, nope, you can't work. I have to work. And I'm just like, dude, let her work. Let her be her. Okay, anyways. Right.
Well, and especially if they're an established star when you meet them, you know, like I can understand if we get, let's say we got married at 18 and at like 25, so my spouse becomes super famous, that would be like very difficult and that would be an adjustment. You'd have to deal with it. But you met on the set of Xanadu. Like
she was already making way more money than you when you met. So
yeah, you were a. I think he was just like a dancer. I think, right?
Yeah, he was just background.
Yeah, so that was frustrating. I'm sure it was way more frustrating in real life for her, but as a viewer, I was like, oh, I want to punch you in the nose. You are terrible, and you felt bad for the daughter. Too,
yeah,
for having Chloe for all of a sudden having to have her parents separate, that's no fun,
and
then she has this relationship with this gaffer cameraman guy named Patrick McDermott,
and then he goes missing,
so they were in the relationship for quite a while. And they started in 1995, and then in I think they had separated. They separated. Yeah. They weren't together. But in 2005, all of a sudden, he disappeared.
Yeah.
But there's some saying that he did this. He staged the disappearance to avoid paying child support, and from an ex-wife, and that he's like hiding out and. Some Latin American country or whatever, and which is
so really they never weird. Found him.
It says the U.S. Coast Guard investigation, based on then available evidence and released in 2008, suggested McDermott was lost at sea. Although some have claimed contact with McDermott since his disappearance in April 2010, private detective searching for McDermott claimed. He was found living in Mexico under his birth name, Pat Kim. So, that is, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah, yikes.
I mean, you have to really, not only do you give up your, I guess they were kind of off or whatever, but your potential relationship, but even just your friends, your family, people who care about you, all this stuff. If he wasn't lost to sea, or he didn't, you know, commit suicide or whatever, if something like that had happened and he is living in Mexico, like that is so selfish.
Oh gosh.
The agony that you put everybody through, like
that's crazy.
That is brutal. And so I don't know. I just like, this is so weird. I can't imagine dealing with all that.
Yeah.
So, and she did, she got married in 2008.
Okay. Yeah, they said that it was at the bottom at the end.
Yeah, yeah.
That she got married to her current husband, but.
Yeah. And evidently she has gotten cancer again and defeated again, I believe. And, evidently, her daughter in 2007, it was in the tabloids that she has anorexia, which I'm so glad they kept that out, because I just don't feel like that would have been needed. It's not her story, you know, it's not her story. It's Olivia's story.
Yeah. And so, her daughter's like an adult, grown up, not really in the limelight or anything. So if they would have gone through that, I feel like that's just like more of an invasion. Exploitative.
I agree. So, I thought they did a great job with the movie reenactments. I thought that the Grease
That was
so amazing. Good.
Right? I love that. Yeah. And then the Xanadu was really good too. I've never seen that movie, but I went and watched the videos online afterward and I was like, wow, they did a good job with Xanadu too.
It's a bonkers movie, but it's pretty fun. Yeah, they did a really good job recreating it, and they did a great job with Grease. I mean, that outfit looked identical. The black outfit looked exactly the same. Her hair looked exactly the same. And I've seen enough of these terrible Lifetime movies where they try to recreate, like, the Britney Spears movie. It
looks so fake.
So bad. Or, like, the Whitney Houston movie was so bad. And it looks like, honestly, sometimes it looks like a, like, I mean, I've never seen it, but they have these like cheap adult entertainment versions of like your favorite movies, right? And they'll be like really bad copies. And the very worst Lifetime ever did was Saved by the Bell, Unauthorized Story.
Oh my God. Is
the worst thing that you've ever seen. Everybody looks like, I swear, if you went down to my high school, my old high school, and you got, you did a casting call from just like that high school, you could have way more talent and way better, say, by the Bell, than in this movie. It's so bad. The Full House one was really bad too, but it wasn't as bad as the Saved by the Bell.
I saw the Full House one. I was like, oh gosh.
Yeah, the Saved by the Bell, they try to have this weird, like, it's supposed to be like Screeches, like Dustin Diamond's big, like, story, kind of, where he's telling his side of the story kind of thing. And it's just so cringeworthy.
What?
Yes, it's so bad. It's supposedly based on his book, his like memoir, and everything is, and everybody is against him. Everybody is mean to him, and it's so bad. But so I've seen bad recreations, is what I'm saying, of classic properties on Lifetime, and this was very well done. I thought the guy playing John Travolta did a great job.
He did awesome. And he sounded like his voice.
Yes.
I was like, whoa. Yes. maybe Lifetime should just start outsourcing some of their movies to Australia.
Yes.
Because, like, this was fantastic. Like,
yeah, I think they should absolutely be doing that from now on. I think that's a great way to go, because I don't know. This was so much better than something like that. It's not even in the same discussion. Mm-hmm. And I mean, let's see what else. Yeah, I really liked Hopelessly Devoted to You was really good. The concert scenes were pretty good, I thought.
Fantastic. I was like, oh, it was so good.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I think we basically covered everything. I mean, like I said, my only real flaw with it is that I think they did try to maybe cram a little bit too much in.
Too much,
and maybe
we
should have had it over two episodes as opposed to just the one.
Yeah. They could have split it up more, yeah.
Yeah. But if I was Olivia Newton-John, I'd be clicking my heels. I mean, I'm sure it's not pleasant to have a movie, you know, made about your life. Yeah. Like, it's a little weird, but considering what could have happened, she came out pretty good, I think.
Yeah. It very much portrayed her in a positive light.
Yeah.
So
yeah, definitely. Without it seeming too scrubbed, like compared to the Victoria Gotti one, which definitely felt scrubbed, you know, and sanitized. This felt, you know, a little bit. It was better, I think.
Yeah.
So there you go. How many stars would you give this one?
I'm gonna give it 4. It was really good. I like it. Yeah.
I'm going to give it a 4.25. Just right. If I'm comparing it against, if I'm comparing against other movies of this genre, of this type, it's definitely one of the best that I've seen in a long time.
Yeah.
So very good. All right. Last one we have is Kim Possible. This is a movie on the Disney Channel that
I'm getting ready to get angry here.
that there was all kinds of people were in uproar about the trailer. People were very upset. And then it seemed like to me that people saw the movie and there was not as big of a backlash as I expected. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people actually liked it better than they expected to like it, including myself. But it is not a property that I have any nostalgia for because obviously I was an adult when it came out. I've seen a few episodes of the show. I've seen both of the movies, which I enjoyed very much. So let's hear, what do you think about this movie?
All right. A lot of my friends were all like, oh, it's going to be so bad. Why are they doing this? Blah, blah, blah. And I was like, no, like just give it a chance. Let's just wait and see. Let's just, you know. And then I watched it and I was like, oh my gosh, they just took the So Not the Drama movie. I think that's what the one was.
Yeah.
They just took it and flipped it and made it her best friend instead. And like, it didn't make sense to me because now they're in high school, but they're not dating. And all of a sudden Rufus isn't there. I was like, is this supposed to be a continuation of the series? Is this just something new? Like, I was very confused because that's like one of the things that was in the series. Like, Rufus was there from like the beginning of them doing missions, so the fact that he wasn't in the beginning, I was like, this makes no sense. Also, I feel like they didn't use Ron enough at all, and also I feel like I don't know, the director was like, oh hey, you guys need to stay 5 feet apart at all times. They were hardly ever close to each other ever.
Interesting.
And I'm like, they're best friends. They would be acting more like best friends. It just felt like there was a disconnect between the two of them for some reason. Do not like the new girl. I don't like her. I just was like, okay, why?
Oh,
like, they just took the animated movie and just made it a girl instead and made it her best friend. And I was like,
Athena. Okay. You didn't like Athena.
I didn't like Athena. Yeah. The Christy Carlson Romano's little cameo. I was like, why? I'm like, why is grandma and mom, why are they like, what, why? I have so many questions. And I was like, okay, yeah, I guess it's cute, but I much rather they would have just taken a couple of episodes and just made them into live action, or taken the movie and just straight made it live action. Or if they were doing a continuation, that they would have like kind of kept consistent to what was in the series. But it was kind of just brand new. Wasn't a real big fan of the guy who played Ron. I didn't buy their chemistry, really. Don't like Athena. Didn't really like the person who played the mom. The little brothers were hardly in it. It just, I was just like, oh, no, I'm, no, no.
Very interesting. Whatever. Well, let's break it down. So I actually enjoyed it. I thought it's not perfect, but I thought it was sweet, and I thought it did a good job of capturing the overall tone and spirit of the show and the movies that I've seen. I thought they, especially the action scenes, I definitely felt like we're sort of in the same spirit of the show, and that they did a good job. And I actually thought that she was very well cast. Sadie Stanley.
She did a good job. I liked her as it. She was a good casting choice, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think she did a really good job. I like the idea behind Athena, because the idea that they were trying to do is they were trying to show that there's this person that can finally sort of do everything that Kim can do, and then she has to sort of say, well, what is it that I can do? What do I offer? Because she had just been the superhero kind of. And I thought that was sort of an interesting, just that conversation with her grandma about, you know, that, and her grandma says, are you feeling jealous? Are you feeling envious? And she says no, which I don't think is probably fully honest, but you know, that she's just having to deal with like, what is it? What's my role now? And I don't know, this is kind of ridiculous thing, but I remember when I, so long growing up, because I was one of the only members of my faith in, I was one of the only Mormons in my high school. There were like four or five of us. And so that was sort of my role. That was it. You know, I was the Mormon girl. And so when I all of a sudden went to college and I was at a Mormon college, all of a sudden I was like, well, what's my role now? That was my role. What is it now in this new place? And so I obviously, like, it's different to being like, well, I was a superhero and now I'm not a superhero anymore. Like, that's different. But I don't know. I kind of appreciated that. I thought it was an attempt to kind of flesh out her character and make her have to kind of grow and evolve. Whereas, like, somebody that's just great at everything, that's not that interesting. Yeah.
I don't know. I was also kind of disappointed. Wait, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Sorry. It just got super quiet. I was disappointed, though, that Kim's best friend in the series was Monique.
Yeah, Monique. Yeah.
And they just, replaced her with this Athena girl. And I was like, well, what happened to Monique? What happened to them going to the mall and hanging out at Bananarama? And getting the cool pants or whatever.
But they did create what's it called? The nachos place. They did place. Do
Buena.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can never say it.
And then they have Sean G and Brone from the Goldbergs as Ron. And I like him. I love the Goldbergs. And so, I mean, I'm already sort of inclined to like him. And I know a lot of people didn't like him, but I liked him. But I thought they didn't have enough of Wade, and that he was in there for so briefly. And I think that they spent too much time at the high school. And it was probably, my guess is it's a budget thing, because obviously the action is going to be the most expensive part of the movie. But it just kind of, it would have been better if they'd had, I think, one more action scene in between all of that high school stuff.
Yeah.
That's just where the movie shined to me. I thought the best parts of the movie, the one that captured the show the most, were these action scenes. And so I don't know, that was a mistake. Because, yeah, you didn't have Rufus very much, which probably was also a budget thing, because I'm sure that's really expensive to make him like that. And, and you didn't have Wade very much. So it was a little distracting that, like, is this person just, like, what's going on?
The Wade, I wasn't sold on the Wade either.
You hardly saw him enough to be sold, I felt like.
Also, where was her phone? Her blue phone? Like, what is this necklace, like, crystal thingy? Like, no, I want her blue phone to do the do-do-do-do like my cell phone does. And
I
was very disappointed about that.
I think the cringiest part of the movie, I in general really liked the movie, but the cringiest line of all was when they show the original outfit, you know, and he's like, oh, I was afraid it was too cartoony. That was
like, no,
the worst line of the movie.
I'm pretty sure the reason they didn't have her in the original costume is because it shows her midriff and they didn't want that.
Yeah.
That's like the only real reason that I think they did that.
Yeah, I agree. I do think that a big key to this movie is how, if you're able to kind of shrug off or find any value in the Athena character, and if you don't, then it's a wash. This movie's not going to work for you. But I was able to sort of, I felt like it did allow Kim to kind of grow as a character, and so I appreciated that. But I also liked the whole introduction. I thought was really strong with Patton Oswalt playing this evil Professor Dementor.
And it wasn't blue enough. Sorry.
But I miss in movies just evilly wicked you know, Professor Dementor kind of villains. Because, like, every villain these days has to have, like, a tragic backstory and be all sympathetic. And sometimes I like my villains to just be snarly, you know, and like, And
They're just doing it for no good reason. Like,
So I thought he was having a great time. And I just thought that whole introduction was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And I liked that. And then you have,
Oh, I'm sorry. I just remembered this part. When he pulled out the Amazon box and was like, you ordered a knockoff version of whatever. I was like, I was dying. That part, I just...
Yeah.
Like, she goes just like on Amazon, like, all right, I ordered what he wanted. Like, oh, gosh. At first, I was hoping they would, like, reveal Athena as to be their daughter, which would have been
different...
Then when she was an android or whatever, I'm like, oh, so basically they just did the same thing as the movie, except they made it her best friend instead of her boyfriend. Okay.
Right. And yeah, it doesn't make sense that they would make such an effort to save Athena, knowing that she's a cyborg, you know, like, mm-hmm. why would you risk your life to save something that's not even human? That doesn't really make sense.
I mean, I guess, like, AI, I don't get it. And also, like, in the original movie, like, he got electrocuted and melted. So, like, never saw him again. And then this one, I guess she's alive and now she's part of the team. And I'm super confused because I don't think, if they did do another one, I don't think they'd ever bring a Monique in because, well, there's Athena now. That's her best friend. So I guess Monique and Banana, what was it called? Bananarama? Was that what the store was called that Monique worked at? Anyways, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. But did you think that, what do you think of Dr. Draken and Shego, I guess is
the name. I liked their casting. I really, really did. I think they were really good. I think they were really well written. It was very similar to the cartoon, in my opinion. I would have liked if they would have gone a little bit more cartoonish and made his face like completely blue. But, you know, I understand why they didn't do that, but still, yeah.
And I actually liked her mom, because maybe it's just because I love Allison Hannigan. She was one of my favorite characters on How I Met Your Mother. But they didn't really use her very much. I feel like if you get a name like Allison Hannigan to play a character, you should use her a little bit more. We didn't need the grandma and the mom. We could have just had the mom. But, and then you actually do have, the voice of Bart Simpson, Nancy Cartwright is actually does the little noises or whatever from Rufus, which is kind of funny.
And she was the original too. She did
okay. Yeah.
She's the only one who kept her job. No, I'm kidding.
Interesting. Yeah. And so overall I enjoyed it. I thought it had nice little moments of heart, and I liked the action. It wasn't perfect. It could have used another action scene, I think, at the high school. I think that would have made it a lot better. And I do agree that that the Athena thing wasn't executed perfectly, particularly with them deciding to like go back and kind of rescue her and risk themselves. I think that Wade and Rufus could have been more involved. But overall, I certainly have seen worse, that's for sure, on Disney Channel. And I thought it was pretty entertaining. I'd give it personally like three stars. So
yeah, I give it like 2-something. And just like the last thing I wanna say is when they picked her head out of the rubble, I was like, this is not for kids. That is terrifying. And it's on Disney Channel. Like, come on. There is, like, little kids watching this movie. You wouldn't have to think, oh, like, yeah, Kim Possible, like, we should be worried about there being dismembered heads. That's,
yeah,
like...
that's true, I guess, yeah. I gave it three stars. I think in my review on my channel, I think I gave it a 7 out of 10. Mm-hmm. Which was probably maybe a little generous, but I don't know. I had a good overall good time watching it, and I did think the casting, particularly of Kim, was really strong, and so anyway, there you go. That's it. So three television movies from Lifetime and from Disney Channel.
Yeah.
We were able to talk about. And so I would say definitely the best of the bunch was the Olivia Newton-John movie.
Olivia Newton-John, yeah.
Very, yes. Very good.
Yes.
And then I would say the Kim Possible and then the Victoria Gotti. But I liked all three.
Yeah, I agree with that. So. I agree with that listing.
Okay, cool. Good. All right. Well, thanks so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
And, no problem.
Let us know in the comment section or on Twitter if you got to see any of these. What did you think about them? Let us know. We'd love to talk about it. And Amy, where can people find you online?
You can find me on YouTube, youtube.com/weekendallstars, or on Twitter and Instagram at It's Amy Craig. And also, if anyone has any recommendations of off-network stuff that we can talk about, please let us know. It's kind of hard to find some of this stuff sometimes on TV, and the Lifetime stuff isn't always great for the podcast, and there's not a ton of Disney all the time. So if there is stuff that's off-network that you want us to watch and want us to talk about, please let us know.
Yeah, and even if there's like maybe some family-friendly feature films that might be worth talking about in an episode, that would be a lot of fun.
Yep.
For sure. So, okay, great. Make sure you're following Amy on her channel. And you can follow me at Rachel's Reviews on iTunes and on YouTube. I do have my review of Kim Possible up on my channel that you can check out. And make sure you're following the podcast, The Hallmark Piece Pod, all over social media. And if you're listening on iTunes, please give us your ratings and reviews. If you're listening on YouTube, please give us thumbs up and subscribe to our channel. We really appreciate it. And let us know what you think, and we'll talk to you all later. Bye.
Bye, guys.